Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. I'm joined today by our great friend and ally, Corey Lynn of Corey Digs. She, among other things, was the producer and co-host of the Solution series, but she's done many amazing, important reports here that we've helped sponsor on the Soleri Report. And we're here to talk about her new blockbuster, you call it, Corey, the Beast. It's called Space, the New Frontier for the Central Control Grid, and it brings together all the things you've been hearing about space since we did our first space wrap-up in 2015, another in 2017, the space-based economy. But we've been talking and speaking about space and how it fits in. And I'll tell you, Corey, you just don't understand the control grid until you have read this report. It's quite an accomplishment. I know you've been working on it for months, I believe. So tell us a little bit about how you got inspired to do this.
Well, goodness. Yeah, I've been working on it for the last couple months. I started seeing, I've had my eyes on it and I've been on space in general. And I've every now and then when I'd see something else come up, I'd kind of make a little mental note. And as time went on, I started seeing more and more connections. And then I saw blockchain and I'm like, oh, wait a minute here. What are they up to? And so I started envisioning all the ways they could utilize space to their advantage. And I saw the central operation for the control grid. So I started digging into it and putting it all together. And by the time I was done, I'm 100% convinced that is what they've been working on.
Right.
Building out this, the main operation for the control grid, for surveillance, for the data capture, for, you know, the tokenization, the blockchain, the digital currency, I believe all of it.
So, there's this wonderful documentary called The Spider's Web about the British offshore havens run out of the city. And when Brexit happened, I was insistent. I thought one of the reasons was they wanted to move a lot of activities to a new offshore haven in space. And they wanted to keep ECB out of it. And that was part of the logic behind Brexit was, I just thought the logical extension of offshore havens was into space. And when we did space-based economy, there was a big report by Morgan Stanley on the space-based economy. And they said the number one application was all the data from cars. And I was like, no, I don't think so. The number one application, the killer app, is financial transactions and the financial transaction control grid, among others.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so it was tricky because I broke this down into, I covered the whole space end of it and then a big section on the digital currency end of it because,
right.
Well, and then a separate section on the blockchain because it's so much information. I mean, I think I cited over 160 pieces of evidence in this. There's so many players. And like you said about the offshore haven, it's perfect because not only do we have pretty much no enforcement in space,
right?
But the treaties that are there with the UN are pretty much a joke anyways because of the immunities and privileges and with, you know, BIS and the banks and just all of it, the immunities.
Right.
And privileges.
So if you move money, because the Bank of International Settlements can manage money on an off-balance sheet secret basis. And the money can get into those accounts on a behind sovereign immunity and stay there behind sovereign immunity, which means the pipeline to see, if you create a jurisdition in the suborbital platform that's basically like a new country, and you move it through the BIS up there, there's no trail.
Right. Right. It's quite brilliant.
Right. It's one of the reasons we've written a series of pieces on the space law.
Mm-hmm.
Because how the legal framework for space and the ability to create and manage and enforce jurisdictions in space, to me, is an exceptionally important topic. And then when you look at the satellite infrastructure that's being put in place and how it relates to the towers and the smartphones as part of the smart grid, you start to realize, oh, we are talking about a breakaway civilization, literally.
Yes. And I personally believe that they are using these trips to, they're glamorizing space again. They're Hollywooding it up. They're saying, well, we're going to start, look at the rocket and look at Starlink across the sky. And isn't it magnificent? And look at the takeoff and the liftoff. And then we're going to bring citizens up to the moon, and we're going to colonize Mars. And they're trying to make this seem like this whole glamorous, wonderful thing. And in my humble opinion, that is all distraction to keep your eyes over there while they're actually building out this infrastructure in low Earth orbit.
Right, that's where the the financial, if you look at all the money pouring into space, the place where there's a financial return is the surveillance and control network and communications in the suborbital platform. I'm one of those people who would love to go into space and explore and expand, and so I buy all the romance stuff, but needless to say, you're right. I think that's not the focus. That's marketing the expenditures. So, I always believe the reason for the financial coup was they decided to say, instead of spending that money on nursing homes, let's just grab it and spend it on space.
Right.
Right.
Oh, and
So,
they've spent a lot.
yeah. So talk a little bit. Let's start with the physical infrastructure, because many people don't realize the explosion of satellites that have happened just over the, so part of what's happening is an explosion of smartphones, towers, and satellites that's creating a digital infrastructure that can start to, collect, manage, deliver overwhelming amounts of data. Tell us a little bit about what's happening with satellites.
Oh gosh, with satellites. So there are multiple areas they're actually working on in order to build this infrastructure. And I would actually say if we can start with the power supply first, because
Okay.
they're working on the space-based data centers. Okay. They want the internet there, they want the data being able to be attached to the satellites. They've already run tests on this. Hewlett Packard, in fact, was the first edge computing data center that's operational in space. And what they're saying is it provides a cooler environment, there's less energy, no vibration, and that this is, that they state that quantum computing is ideal for the environment and that neural network computing and financial data centers will require this high processing capacity. And so you've got the European Union teaming up with Thales Alenia Space, and they want to deploy their data centers by early 2030s. It's satellite to satellite communication. And so with that, they're working on their solar power. And so you've got these, and I was blown away when I started looking into this.
So can I just stop
Space-based.
you for a second? When we did the 2015 wrap up, we had pictures of the Japanese were working on solar farms in space at that time.
Yes.
So this has been going on for a long time, but it doesn't get a lot of attention.
Right. They actually started talking about this back in the 1960s, by an engineer, Peter Glaser, if I'm saying his name right. And so in 1977, NASA began talking about how they could eventually create space-based solar systems that would replace fossil fuels. And Russia was also talking about it back then. So now what we have is multiple countries working on these solar systems, and how they're saying this works is that they can produce 10 times the amount of power off the sun if they're have a system out in space. So they can then take and harness that energy 24/7 and channel it over to, or beam, they like to say beam it over to their other satellites that are in space, but then also beam it down to Earth to some sort of receiver base that could then power towns. Forget about the microwave energies, and and the how this might impact birds or planes. So you've got numerous countries working on these systems right now, all of which plan on rolling things out as early as a year from now up till the 2030s. And the idea is, of course, under the guise of climate change, that we need to be able to bring more power here. We're going to need more power in space. And by running this system off planet, we're going to conserve on the power consumption here, because technically, if they were to, according to data and statistics, if they were to try and run this entire digital currency financial system here, it would require so much power that people would have to start, consumers would have to drastically cut their usage, their consumption. So this is their reasoning for why we need to start building this infrastructure in space, while also it benefits powering the satellites and commercial space stations they plan on building.
So I was just up in Norway, and the second we went to Oslo and then Stavanger, which is an oil, they have huge oil operations out of Stavanger in Norway. And I had dinner with some people who are exceptionally knowledgeable about the energy business, including a petroleum engineer. And we were talking about how much energy blockchain uses. And they said, compared to blockchain is nothing compared to AI. And if you look at what the financial transaction control grid and the whole infrastructure needs, not just in terms of blockchain, but then AI, the energy, I mean, they just said the energy use, it can never be economic and never make sense. So the question is doing it this way and doing a lot of those computations in space, is that somehow going to make it economic? That's, to me, that's the question.
Well, I mean, according to them, the way they can generate power 24/7, it would, but I don't know. But yes, and of course, in everything that they talk about with this, they bring AI into it as well. So you know what? Before I get into satellites, I got to get some statistics out, because
Okay.
these are some important statistics. So Morgan Stanley, just so people have perspective on this, their space team estimates that the 350 billion global space industry will reach over a trillion by 2040. So this is how gangbusters they're going into this. And
But I
we've
have to
actually,
tell you, that just sounds like a complete underestimation.
yes, completely.
Complete,
I
yeah.
agree. I
So maybe
agree.
they mean the overt part of the space economy. The total size of the space economy, I'm sure, has surpassed that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the other thing that's important, because cell phones are, their weapon of choice, is right now, as of 2022, there are over 6.4 billion mobile phone users, and they're expecting this to reach 7.7 billion by 2028.
Everybody.
So I know, and 85% of people using these phones are also using social media. And so with social media, we know that ties into the digital currencies, and they're pulling all that in. And as of right now, they're also saying we have 8 billion people on this planet, and which I find interesting that those numbers ticked up when they really probably ticked down. But that said, that means what they're suggesting here is pretty much by 2028, they anticipate having the entire globe on mobile phones. And there's a reason for that. They're pushing very hard through the banks to enforce to start rolling out the, QR codes and biometrics. And so they use the example of the statistic of China, that just in the fourth quarter of 2019, China had reached 1.3 trillion, that's in US dollars, in payments, scan payments through QR codes. So that is where they are definitely heading with it, at least for now, in the beginning, they want to start with, rolling it through the banks, through the QR codes for all the financial. And yeah, there's several other statistics too, but we can go swing back to satellites if you want.
So if you look at the explosion of satellites since 1970, it's extraordinary. And I think Arthur Fursterberg has said that they're planning on going to 440,000 satellites. But just in the last 2 years, the number has multiplied an extraordinary amount because you have not only the private guys like SpaceX and Blue Origins and others, the private companies putting up satellites. But now you've got very significant Asian space programs. And, Russia and the US have always traditionally been in the lead, but now the Europeans have a GIS system up there, and the Chinese are working towards also having a global GIS system. So there's quite a space race going on with satellites.
Oh, most definitely. Definitely. Yeah, according so it's funny because you can look under different sources, you're going to get different numbers across the board. And none of them are nowhere near what is accurate. But so, according to the UN, they say there's nearly 12,000 satellites in space right now, which we know there's far more than that. Musk alone, with his Starlink program, has around 5,000, and he's looking to get up to 42,000 as soon as possible. And so I want to talk about Starlink for a minute because it is being sold as this wonderful way to get everyone on the internet. And though it is doing that, it's also serving many other purposes. And so the Starlinks, I don't know if people are aware of this, but they have the ability to beam lasers between from Starlink to Starlink. So they're creating a mesh network in space. And so now he has this other division called Star Shield that is specific satellites that are specifically being built out for government and military because those have additional cryptographic ability to where they can host classified payloads and process data securely. Now they can hop the data from Starlink, and they even state this in their documentation, over to the Starshield satellites, therefore gathering all that data and bringing it
Right.
over to the military.
So it becomes 100% military operation.
And right now, just a couple weeks ago, Space Force came out and said that they are working on a guidance strategy with commercial companies with their satellites to where they can work together in peacetime and wartime.
I
So,
saw that. That is so chilling. It's unbelievable. Right.
yeah. So I actually just checked this morning to see if that had come out yet, and we're still waiting for that to come out to see what that looks like. But very interesting there. So there was the Communications Satellite Act was in 1962. But what I want to point out is in 2000, so it used to be, intergovernmental, and it was
Right.
Intelsat, and I never know how to pronounce the other one, Imrasat, I think. And so they decide in 2000, Congress gets together and says, well, we need to pass the Orbit Act, which is going to privatize satellites so that, we can have competition in the market, and this shouldn't be under government. So in July 2001, Intelsat privatizes. 2 months later, 9/11 happens. The Pentagon goes and spends millions buying exclusive rights to Iknos satellite pics after bombing Afghanistan. I just find that interesting. And then in March 2002 is when SpaceX was born. So now what we have is they've commercialized and privatized all of these different companies. So we see, like, in fact, just a few days ago, Bezos, I'm blanking on what the name of his
Blue
satellite,
Origins, Blue
Blue
Origin.
Origins, yes. Those just launched on October 6th. I think that was the first time those were going up. And so you've got all this, what you would think would be competition up there with the commercial ones, but now you've got Space Force coming in to say how they're all gonna team up, and also
Right.
space.
And this is going to integrate with the cloud, because remember Amazon, Google, you've got a small number. Leidos, who does the Navy cloud, is the spin out from Lockheed Martin. So now you've got huge cloud contracts between the whole military and intelligence, and those are absolutely integrating in with the satellite systems.
And so they are, funding SpaceX to essentially build out the Star Shields. And so they're the government through Space Force is contracting with them. And Space Force, which we can, well, actually, let me just bring this up now. So I find this interesting because they're moving a lot of responsibility under Space Force. So, for
Right.
example, in August of last year in 2022, for the first time ever, all military SATCOM capabilities were consolidated under one service. It was all transferred over to Space Force, and they even moved 200 civilians and 300 military personnel from the Army over to Space Force. Then, fast forward to just October 1st of this year. And they moved the US Army's Joint Tactical Ground Station missile warning system, which processes, the satellite data and disseminates ballistic
Right.
missile warnings. So they just moved that under Space Force too.
So remember, I don't know if you saw some of the back and forth between the military and Musk over what SpaceX would be used to do and not used to do in the Ukraine. There was a bit of a tiff.
I do.
Right. And it's important, I think it's important for people to realize that more and more of what is happening as war is being done by things that operate off of space, off of satellites, whether, whether it's drones, whether it's weather warfare, whether, you have all this functionality related to weaponry and of course surveillance, because intelligence is what really wins wars. So this integration of the commercial with the military essentially is a very radical change. Because again, it's all in a super jurisdiction where it's impossible for anybody on Earth, or I shouldn't say it's impossible, it's extremely difficult for anybody on Earth to punch through.
Right. And what I want people to realize is because when that was happening, a lot of people were coming out and saying, Elon Musk just saved us from World War III because of a mechanism where they had the ability to turn something off on their satellite so that Ukraine couldn't use them in a way to connect with their drones, I believe it was. And I just want people to understand, SpaceX and Starlink satellites have been running tests for years with our military. They're not just your, like you were just saying, these are not just to hook people up to internet.
Right.
So, as an example, in April 2020, they teamed up with the Air Force to link the Starlink satellites with multiple armed force systems for a huge live fire exercise that included ground forces, submarine ships, and other space-based assets to shoot down a cruise missile and a drone. And prior to that, they connected to a Lockheed Martin AC-130 gunship. So they've been teaming up with the Department of Defense on many projects. They have a lot of capabilities, which is why they said, "Hey, we really like these capabilities, and now we're going to expand and we're going to make these more secure, and we're going to do a whole line under Starshield just for the military." So, yeah, that's really, really important to note.
I want to mention one thing, and I off and on, I've spent a fair amount of time looking at the underground base infrastructure, primarily in the US, but globally. A lot of space operations happen from either restricted areas, so Area 51 is a restricted area, but a lot also happen from underground bases. And I think most people can't imagine how is this all going on and me not seeing it as I drive around. And so there's been a tremendous investment in infrastructure that you don't see driving around in your neighborhood.
Right. Oh yeah, there's a lot, and in fact, I can't think of the number. I want to say, well, so Starlink, for example, they're in over 60 countries, I believe, but they have the bulk is in the US, and they have ground-based stations as well that relay the information to the satellites. That said, now that they have the lasers activated that go from satellite to satellite, and they're building this mesh network, eventually, I believe ground stations won't be necessary, because in everything else I was researching, they make it a point to state that once they have these data centers, for example, all operational, and the military has their own internet and they've got everything working, that they won't need ground-based stations. So I don't know if at that point they're going to say, our everything is still pinging off of the cell towers and our cell phones, or if at some point maybe they upgrade the cell phones to better operate with them, to where there is no relaying necessary at that point from, right. So you think of that, where now no one has any access to anything on the ground and it's all in low Earth orbit.
Pretty
So,
scary.
yeah.
So space fence. For years, Ilana Friedland's been writing about space fence. We've reviewed her books here on the Salary Report, and Harry Blaser interviewed her for us several years ago. But I know one of the things you did is you reached out and you reviewed her work and talked with Alana. Talk to us, what is the space fence?
So, according to Lockheed Martin, it's the world's most advanced radar. Lockheed is the one who had the contract on it and built it out in the Marshall Islands. I can't even pronounce the exact island that it's on. I have a diagram of it in the report. And so it's this infrastructure. It's a second generation space surveillance system to track space debris in Earth's orbit, as well as satellites, and it's operated by Space Force. And so they're saying now it can detect objects as small as a marble and provide cover in geosynchronous orbit, all while maintaining a surveillance space fence. Now, I asked Alana what it, how she sees it, what it is, and I'd actually like to quote her on this, because she brought up a couple of really key points here. So first off, for Ilana Freeland, she wrote the book, several books, but Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. I think that's a really important book for people to pick up. And she says that it's because it's how to weaponize an entire electromagnetic system in order to run the Earth as a machine. And so she says, this idea is that the human mind is to be plugged into the secret space program, and of course the space fence. It's like turning your devices into nodes on the smart grid. Now she gets into nanotechnology, which more people are probably familiar with now after COVID, because they've already stated that it's been used in the jabs. So she points out, she says, the nanotech is the sealant of all of this. The nanotech is actually another Manhattan Project, because it takes place on the atomic level, laying atom next to atom next to atom. The nano part is the most mysterious and most dangerous to our species, because now they've got it in the serums and jab everybody and get more nanotech into them. But we also have nanotech because we've been breathing it for 25 years. And so it's the nanotech that will be the real nodes, in a way, that plug the human being deeply into the secret space programs that come out of the space fence lockdown. And she explains that it's like a grid in space with energy systems producing lines to create sort of a canopy. And the if you there, I actually have it linked in my report. You can go to an interactive map and you can see, like, just as an example, all the Starlinks, and it goes around the globe, and they're like in perfect roads. It does. It makes up this perfect grid. And so, she points out that there's tons of heavy metal particulates that act as antennas for communications in space. And so it's like nodes that, I can't explain it really, really well. I can't
Right.
explain it quite the way she
Well,
can,
think of it,
but
think of this as a digitization of everything. Right. And, including putting digital component or components that can interact in our bodies.
Right. So eventually,
Right.
one day, we ultimately wouldn't necessarily need the cell phones in order to be tracked or control our access or assets that, these nodes and God knows what else would interact with everything. She also pointed out that they need that moisture in the air messes with their signals. And so that kind of raised my eyebrow, and I said, is this why we seem to be having all these droughts recently? Because, for those who aren't new to, and I'm sure your listeners are not new to weather modification and
Right.
nanotech and whatnot, but I do have a document in here for those that would like to read it. That's a 1996 paper titled "Weather as a Force Multiplier: Owning the Weather in 2025," which was for the U.S. Air Force. And they talk about, using weather modification as a future weapon that could be as important as the atom bomb. But they also get into several other areas in here with ionospheric modification. So these things are being done, and it sounds very sci-fi, I realize, but
It's not, actually, it's not sci-fi if you're covering these things, but it's not, the information about this is not readily promoted or available, but it's
right.
been going on for decades. So let me just say a few words about two of the players you mentioned. One or one player, and then one I want to mention. Lockheed Martin is by far and away the largest contractor to the U.S. government. You could argue that Lockheed Martin runs the U.S. government operationally. And for many years, Lockheed Martin ran the information systems at DoD and HUD while $21 trillion went missing. And in fact, Lockheed spun that group off to Leidos after the $6.5 trillion went missing in 2015. And I announced that Lockheed Martin had done a cut and run. I remember getting to Australia in 2017, I think, 17, 18, and being told by one of the dealers there that Lockheed Martin had just gotten the big contract to essentially run all the systems for the Australian government. So this is how they're integrating, this is how integration works. So when I look at the US government, some people see 24 agencies. I see just a few companies running all the clouds and information systems. And it's one data beast is the way to think about it. And it's
Right.
controlled privately. And that includes, when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing, I would try and get data that I needed to just comply with the law in my operation. And the guys at Lockheed Martin refused to give it to me. It was like a war. It was a data war.
I bet.
Yeah. But I want to bring up another player, and that is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency at DHS, Department of Homeland Security. In the Missouri versus Biden case, it's called CISA. So the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has taken the position in the case that our mines are part of the national security infrastructure, and therefore they have jurisdiction over our mines. And this has become a big, there was just a restatement in the legal case that we talked about in Money and Markets. And it was to make sure that CISA was part of the case. So this is absolutely a component part. And I just have to mention an out of the way factoid that I find, history rhymes is the only way I can say. You're not going to believe where CISA's future headquarters are. They're moving. They're in Arlington, Virginia right now. They're moving them to Anacostia, to St. Elizabeth's campus. That is the site of the famous DC psychiatric hospital. Wait, it gets better. So when Kelly O'Meara, she wrote an article, she was researching St. Elizabeth's, and she went through all the historical death records of the patients at St. Elizabeth. And she called me. She was in the National Archive. She called me and she said, all these patients, they go into St. Elizabeth's and then they die exactly 6 months later. And then they're buried down at St. Elizabeth's. And she said, how can this be? And I said, because the district probably provides 6 months of funding and then, there's no funding. And then they, essentially they euthanize them. That's the only thing I can explain, which tells
Right.
you what the spiritual temperament at St. Elizabeth's will be.
Right.
So as Chief Seattle was thought to say, the dead are not powerless.
No.
So I look forward to the cybersecurity and infrastructure security agencies' fun and games in their new headquarters.
Oh, good grief. Well, and another thing to point out is in 2021, the White House put together this National Nanotechnology Initiative strategic plan. And in it, they state drug delivery systems, noting the success of using nanomaterials in the COVID injections and new efforts to develop nanoparticle universal vaccines, while also acknowledging the contributions of nanotech in advancing quantum computing and artificial intelligence. And in addition to that, the DoD more than doubled its spending on just undirected energy weapons from $535 million in 2017 to $1.1 billion in 2019. So they've been, and I could list a ton more of these because Edge and I often break down the big omnibus bills and infrastructure bills they put together, and we show where the money's really going. And there is a lot going into this type of stuff right now.
Right. So, for example, if you look at the billions that they scheduled in the NDAA for biodefense, I mean, what you've been mapping out and other researchers have been mapping out is a tsunami of money into all of these control aspects. So a tsunami of money into 5G and related weaponry, and a tsunami of money into nanotechnology, and a tsunami of money into biodefense, and a tsunami of money into the space-based control grid. I mean, it just goes on. A tsunami of money into biometrics, and a tsunami of money into the QR codes and the passports. And there money is no object. So in the last 20 days, 5 days ago, it was announced in the last 20 days, the U.S. deficit rose by $500 billion in 20
Wow.
days.
Wow.
Right. And so there's nothing, I mean, this is now that the debt growth model is over, this infrastructure is a grab for all the assets on the planet. So, the BIS is tokenizing everything. And basically, you're talking about a grab for all the assets under total central control. But you're also talking about, and I don't want to use the exact word on the Solari report, a cluster, you know what, of unbelievable proportion.
Oh,
In
yeah.
other words, yeah, I mean, there's no way, if you look, all this money is going to bump into each other. All these operations are going to bump into each other. The turf wars are going to be unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. The competition, I think that's one of the things that I found most intriguing throughout the reports I've done the last few years, because you suspect that there's, one core group that's just running the show. They're like the puppet masters, but there's so, and to some degree there is, but there's so much competition in the space arena, in the digital currency, in the blockchain, just all of it. And I realize many are low men on the totem pole and whatnot, but it's still fascinating to see the sheer competition in all of
Well,
this.
you know what it reminds me of? At Salomon Brothers, there were different management techniques on Wall Street. At Salomon Brothers, they want to do, they'd want to invent some new kind of security. So they would basically tell 10, they basically anoint 10 different teams to go do it. and without telling each other, you know, so one team wouldn't know the other 10 teams or 9 teams exist until they'd bump into them. And the next thing you know, they're all competing and warring. And their theory was if we ask 10 teams to do it and they all compete and fight and, you know, we'll get it faster. And, you know, we don't mind 9 teams crashing and burning. It's the old venture capital model. You know, you finance 30 companies and one or two being successful is what pays for the whole thing. And as long as you're just printing money and burning up taxpayers' resources, why not? It keeps
Right.
everybody busy working for you, the more money you throw out there.
That's right.
So you have
That's
no
right.
need, as long as you've got the reserve currency, you have no need to be economic. In fact, you win by wearing everybody else and outspending them 10 or 20 or 100 to 1.
So Space Fence allegedly, I personally think it probably more money went into this, but they declared on March 27th of 2020 is when they announced Space Fence infrastructure to be operational, and they're saying that was 1.5 billion. But now we have with this war going on in Israel. We have shortly after that began, shares, people started buying shares in Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and General Dynamics. And I forget, there was probably a couple others in there, which, you know, weapons, sure, but it also, these are the ones who are directly working on building this infrastructure in space. And then we have, and I just want to read this because if I just found this morning. So this is a recent article that just came out. And so in the wake of the Hamas attack, the National Reconnaissance Office, the spy agency in charge of America's intelligence satellites, is working with other intelligence agencies to make sure that U.S. satellites are capable and relevant, NRO's Deputy Director Major General Christopher Povec said Tuesday at a Mitchell Institute event. He goes on to say, we in the NRO and our partners across the intelligence community are not losing sight that there are hotspots, potential areas of concern that happen all around the world. And that's where NRO systems, I think, provide both a tactical and strategic advantage. We can see the world, we can sense the world, and we can hear everything that's happening in the world at any given time. And so it just goes on to state how they really need to amp this up because unfortunately they just weren't able to see this coming.
Okay, so let me talk a little bit about stocks. The ETF for defense contracting stocks, the most common traded is the ticker is ITA. And let me just get you their full name. Okay, so ITA is the iShares US Aerospace and Defense. So if you look at their stock, starting in, you know, April, they were towards their high, got back to sort of a high in August, at the end of August, but then they started to slide and they slid steadily from, so let's see, Lockheed at 8:30 was up. No, they were down for the year, but they started to slide badly till October 5th. And just on October 5th, magically, both ITA and Lockheed soared up. And so Lockheed is still down almost 10% for the year, and ITA is down about 2.3% of the year. But you know, they were significantly down more as of the end of August.
Interesting. So do you want to get into the financial end of this,
Yeah,
the
so
digital
let's look at the
currency?
financial end because I think to me, the killer app in space is the financial transaction control grid. And it's a killer app, not just because of the power and the energy. And, you know, I know what they've said about how much more efficient the energy is there. I'm not sure if I believe that story, given what they can do with breakthrough energy on Earth, but let's just assume they believe that's true. the real killer app is being outside the US or global, the global jurisdiction on Earth. In other words, you have a way of getting into space and staying in space. Nobody can bust through, or I don't see a way to bust through if you're moving the money up under sovereign immunity and all the archiving and regulatory structure is out there in space. How do you punch through and get money back if it's domiciled in a new jurisdiction out there in space?
Well, so yeah, that's where I find the whole blockchain part very interesting here. And I actually have a video that is a demo that JP Morgan did. So JP Morgan, through their SpaceBridge division, they tested the world's first bank-led tokenized value transfer in space. And they did this using, smart contracts on a blockchain network that they had established between satellites. And they did a, successful payment where it was relaying back from the phone, and so on. And so you've got there's tons of action going on. People can go on and read the report, but there's tons of action going on with blockchain and space. You've got, NASA is working on it, and they're saying for their purposes, it's based on operations and space missions. They want to be able to keep, a ledger and whatnot. Space Chain, big company that started out of Singapore in 2017, they've developed a mobile device that lets you perform digital asset transactions for Bitcoin, Ethereum, and stablecoin at any time and anywhere, allowing you to connect to a network anywhere you are. And there's no ground infrastructure needed because it communicates directly with satellites. You got IBM Space Tech involved, Blockstream, Bitcoin, CryptoSat. China's working on some stuff there. Of course, Deloitte has teamed up with Bitwave, which I found that interesting because Bitwave has software that automates the flow of data from over 70 blockchains into ERP systems. And so then you pull in Deloitte, who's all focused on being compliant with global policies and taxes and automating the accounting and streamlining the crypto assets. And so I can see where that's going. So blockchain is playing a very, very key role in this. And in fact, the wonderful Tony Blair Institute stated that blockchain will provide outer space with an immutable and automated information ledger until the end of time. The transaction is there and tamper-proof.
How are sovereign governments going to enforce taxes and money that's in offshore havens in the suborbital platform? They can't.
I don't know. Are they going to automatically just do the math in our bank accounts and extract the money out through the
No, I don't. Because our money will be domiciled on Earth. It's going to be, it's going to be the insiders who are domiciled out in the offshore havens, I'm assuming. You're talking again about a two-tiered system. Those who are behind sovereign immunity and those who are not. Now, it's funny because I think 21 trillion is missing from the US government. And I believe that there is a way to assert and get those assets back. I don't care how much you put in space, because, the real action is down here on Earth.
Well, so
And we roll into the G20 meeting, including, led by the Indian finance minister, making a full-on announcement in complete and utter support with the BIS CBDC framework. It was quite, it was like, we're all in for the BIS control model. It's what it
Oh,
really,
yeah.
yeah. So, and that's the frightening thing. If you look at that complete G20, kiss the ring of the BIS and the whole control grid or financial transaction control grid, when you integrate it with what you're saying about space, what you realize is, this is a huge machinery that's being built, whether it's the physical infrastructure, the legal infrastructure, or the financial transaction control grid and how it fits in. And I think you've done more than just about anybody to document this. But needless to say, it does look like everybody in the G20 is fully on board for this, including the space aspect, right?
Oh yeah, and I have that report linked in this report as well. But in addition to that, here's the part that I found very fascinating when I started putting it together in a timeline fashion. So I think most people have probably heard by now about FedNow, the gateway that rolled
Right.
out.
Oh, the section on fast payments is excellent.
Yeah, that's the
Excellent.
most critical
Yes.
part. And I remember calling you and saying, I don't think we need CBDCs to lock all this in.
Exactly. We do
I
not need
wrote.
seed. We do. That's why I keep talking about financial transaction control. Fast payments, they can do all of this with Visa and MasterCard.
Right.
Right.
Well, and with these gateways, they've already got rolling. So we've got, just so people understand, so we have the FedNow gateway, which rolled out in the US in over 35 banks, and it started piloting in it's either in July of this year. Okay, so that's like a gateway behind the scenes in your bank. You may or
Right.
may not even realize that it's your bank's using it. You're doing a transaction and it's the gateway just sending it through.
Right.
So, but through the, that's operating through Federal Reserve. So then we have the fast payment systems, which rolled out in January 2021. So that's your real-time payer to payee. And they're already running in over 60 countries. And coincidentally, no coincidence, this is rolled out by the World Bank and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Kingdom of the Netherlands are funding this.
Right.
So that system is already in place. And so, for example, like PayPal and Venmo already connected, and TCH partnered with Zelle to provide settlement payments. So they're not cutting the digital wallet guys out. They're rolling them right in through
Right.
all of this. So then we've got the Federal Reserve created a QR code working group called, under the Fast Payments Council, which was created, and they have this 19-page white paper that they put out in July 2022. And what they say they want is a standardized certification program covering all major mobile devices and operating systems and extensible standards with the ability to offer value-added services such as merchant offers, coupons, and tokenization. So they're trying to push the QR codes, like I've been saying for a long time now, getting the banks to champion this and move this forward.
Right.
And so they have Matt Howarter, not sure how to say his last name there, of Walmart, who's chairing it, which is no surprise because they started implementing the pay by QR code system a long time ago at Walmart to test it out. So then on top of this, we've got the new ISO 20022 messaging standards that launched in 2023. And you've got some crypto and digital wallets that are getting on board and integrating with that as well, which is going to be necessary for the past fast payment systems. Now, the new messaging system is cranking through a lot more data, which I don't know, I'm not smart enough. Maybe you could tell me. To me, I just see, oh, so more programmable things, gathering more data and information they can pass through.
But the scary thing is creating a financial transaction grid that can enforce a lockdown or a mandate of anything, or any, because you're talking about money that can be location or function specific.
Right.
Right. So, and you can do that without CBDC. You can do that just with the right payment infrastructure. So,
Right.
right.
But even so, BIS is on top of it.
Right.
So we reported on the BIS blueprint that was released in June 2023, where they say that all private property in the real world, such as money, houses, cars, etc., would be tokenized into digital assets within everything in one place. Global Unified Ledger using smart contracts on one programmable platform. So now they've been running, they call it the Nexus Gateway, and they're saying that, so they've been running these tests on the CBDCs. And in fact, just literally a week and a half ago, they showed their successful test on cross-border wholesale CBDCs. And that was tested through BIS and the central banks of France, Singapore, and Switzerland. And they say this could form the basis for a new generation of financial market infrastructures, because all they have to do then is everyone who's on the fast payment systems can then piggyback into this, the Nexus gateway or other gateways that are being created, and then boom, click them right into the CBDCs once that's all green lighted.
So we, at the request of some legislators, we posted a shorty collection of CBDC shorts, video shorts, starting with the famous Carsten's 55 seconds, it's our money and we want to control everything centrally. But my favorite one is Neil Kashkari, the president of the Minneapolis Fed, saying, I can understand why the Chinese want CBDC because it gives them total surveillance and control. But why would Americans ever let this happen? And he's the president of a Fed bank, right?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, when we publish this, we'll put a link to the CBDC. It's 70 videos. And by the time you finish watching it, you realize exactly what this is about.
Right.
Anyway, so before we finish, any other points we want to make? This has been very, very helpful, Corey, because it's, this is a lot to take in if you haven't been focused on space. And I think this is a great overview. But any other key points you want to make before we wind up?
Well, I would just say on the crypto front, because this is an area I'm hoping maybe you can add some insight to, but they have rolled some cryptos into this. They are getting up, with the ISO standards, and they are wanting to, be a part of this and get involved with the blockchain and space and all that good stuff. So just I want to read these 2 points because I think this is key. And I know there are, I'm personally not involved with cryptocurrency, but there are a lot of people out there that are. And I know there's a belief system that there's a way to maintain crypto and keep it decentralized. I'm not smart enough in that area to know either way. My gut just says, I just don't see how they're not going to grab this, scoop this up, and centralize it. So I want to read these 2 points. Mm-hmm. One from the World Bank report in 2021 that said, crypto assets appear to be on the rise globally, including some that certain individuals and firms consider to be a medium of exchange. If these crypto assets with payment capabilities gain more mainstream acceptance, a question will arise as to whether or how they shall or could become interoperable with existing payment systems, including fast payment arrangements. But then you fast forward to August 2023, where I found in a BIS report, they say authorities face a number of policy options to address risks in crypto assets, ranging from outright bans to containment to regulation. While crypto-related activities have not fulfilled their stated goals to date, the technology could still be applied in various constructive ways, creating a regulatory framework to channel innovation into such socially useful directions will remain a key challenge in the future. And so, not sure where that leaves us on the crypto front, and wondering what your thoughts might be on that.
So here's the thing, if I'm Mr. Global, between the legal and regulatory issues on the ground and the fact that it's my digital infrastructure, the speed at which I can knock out or control any crypto would dazzle the imagination. And it's something the crypto guys don't understand, or many of them don't understand because they've never seen it move when it gets ready to move. It's quite competent. So if I were Mr. Global, I'd let the cryptocurrencies thrive until I got everybody into the all digital infrastructure and got rid of cash. And then I just squeeze them out or control them, whichever way I wanted to do it. But right. But everything and everybody, with rare exception, on the digital infrastructure is under central control, unless we can have a rich enough, there should be a way that you can You know, I told you Bill Binney's wonderful idea of having all the kids learn cryptography and encryption and just cycle homegrown grassroots encryption programs so much, so in so many places locally, it'll drive them crazy.
Right.
So I think there, you know, I think if you're in cryptocurrency, you need to understand, you know, what the control game is and the incredible power that Mr. Global has through both the legal and regulatory, as well as through the control of the digital infrastructure, which if you have to see it from the space side, if you understand the control from the space side, then the question is if you can use piracy tactics in the crypto world to basically trigger what I call the Midianite thing, turn them all against each other. And, you know, I'm a great believer that there's always a way, but we need a lot more, I think, understanding in the crypto world of the, you know, the fact that you're playing on your enemy's infrastructure.
Right.
And your enemy is going to tolerate you as long as you're taking the world into the all digital direction that they want to go. I mean, crypto is doing a great job of talking people out of real assets and into digital assets. And as long as it does that, Mr. Global's going to encourage it. So,
Right. That's how I've always seen it.
right. But I think, you know, in a free, healthy economy, we would have digital assets and we would have real assets, and we would arbitrage and optimize between the two. And if we had a world of financial freedom, we'd have lots of private currencies, cryptocurrencies, community currencies, and it would all be good. So,
Right.
you know, it would require some kind of market shakeout or regulation or, you know, whatever. But what we need are cryptocurrency. You know, I just spent a week last week with a wonderful cryptocurrency, or somebody very knowledgeable about cryptocurrency who understands the game. You know, and so they're fun to be around. What Where I get really frustrated with crypto people who don't understand the real game and
Right.
how powerful and vicious the real game is. So there's nothing more frightening than a naive person who promotes digital anything, of
Right,
which
right.
I used to be one. You know, it's funny, I'll never forget coming back to Tennessee and telling my wonderful stepmother, who, you know, wanted to do nothing online. She was so savvy, and I'd say, "Oh, this technology is wonderful. We could do wonderful things for communities." And she'd just look at me like, "You are so dumb. You have no idea. You have no idea how the real world works." And, you know, of course, she was right. So I was one of them.
Yeah.
Okay, Corey. Well, this report, you know, you've had a lot of blockbuster. You've done a lot of blockbuster reports, and a lot, you know, your book on vaccine, your series on vaccine passports, your series on sovereign immunity. It's just been wonderful. And the solution series, of course, was the highlight of her year. But I just think you cannot understand the control grid or the confidence of the establishment until you understand what they're up to in space.
Yeah.
So I just think this is a tremendous contribution, and I'm thrilled for Solari to be associated with it. I would like to point out you can purchase it at Corey's store in PDF form, and I strongly recommend you do that one. You know, this is something to put in your library and document, you know, download it, put it away. It's a classic. But the other thing is support Corey. You can't imagine how much work and time it takes to do this kind of research. And it's invaluable intelligence. So I would really encourage everybody to go over to Corey Diggs and purchase a copy in PDF format or make a donation, because you know, this is a real classic. And I can't thank you enough, Corey. It was a great job.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. The control grid, central control grid, space, the new frontier for the central control grid, by Corey Lynn of Corey Diggs. Thank you very much for joining us on the Solari Report. Have a wonderful day.
You too.